Hello, good IDTenty listener. This is the IDTenty podcast number 1095. Say, what are you up to out there in the IDTenty community? Let's check in with the corkboard, the virtual corkboard. It's a corkboard that's invisible. But you can send us your thing at events at IDTenty.com, like Mike, who writes, "My name is Mike Shantz, and my best friend Tom Stewart and I have made a thing. It's a podcast called the Everything Sequel Podcast, which is dedicated to the most difficult of movies to get right, the sequel." Amen, sir. "We rank sequels in a series, or rank the single sequels from each calendar year, declare each movie as good or bad, hash each sequel out, and then pitch a final sequel for the audience to vote on. We're having a blast, and we'd love for people to give us a listen. Thank you." Brilliant idea, Mike, because the sequel is very difficult to get right. Right? Because you make a first of a movie, and then accidentally a lot of things become amazing, and then how much do you lean into those things and milk them for the sequel? It just, or make it too engineered, or have to retcon a bunch of stuff, like explain a bunch of things in the sequel. You know, I mean, it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing to capture magic twice. And then the third part of the series is a whole other... So the third movie, you actually, if a sequel sucks, you actually have some room for the third movie to be good, right? Because then people are coming from a place of low expectations, but it is not an easy thing to achieve. So great job on the podcast, and hopefully we can send some listeners your way. This episode is Corey Taylor from Slipknot, who is it's a great dude. I mean, he was on 4 years ago. I feel like it was 4 years ago because I'm pretty sure he came to the At Midnight stages then, so that probably would have been, you know, like 4 years ago. And we had a terrific chat, and this time we had a terrific chat because he's just a really nice, open, honest dude. And so we talk a lot about a growth and the process of trying new things and going in new directions, because Corey has a solo album that's out now called CMFT, and it is available October 2nd, which is a couple days from the posting of this podcast, and was sort of a different direction for him. And so we sort of talk about, like, oh yeah, you know, Slipknot is its own thing, and then I had stuff I wanted to do, but just as me. And so, you know, during quarantine, he just said, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. And so he did. He recorded this album that he'd been working on for a long time. And there is actually an acoustic performance of one of the tracks from this album, Highway 666, which is at the end of the podcast. So stick around for that. But just thanks to Corey for just being a nice dude and a really terrific guest. So this is the ID10T podcast number 1095 with Mr. Corey Taylor. Let's roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Good, man. How you doing?
Well, it's good to see you again.
You too, man. Fuck, it's been a minute.
It seems like it's just been a minute. It's been years.
I know. It was like 4 years ago.
I know, but there are things that happen in like January that feel like they were...
Well, you know what? You're not wrong on that. I can't fault your logic.
Time feels very elastic right now. So.
Dude, this is the weirdest time I think I've ever experienced, like through all my years, even when I was a kid. Like, I mean, this is just fucking bananas, man.
Yeah, it is strange because this is one of those things, and I know you have three kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, are they looking to you and going, dude, what the fuck? And you're like, I don't know what the fuck.
it's insane, dude. Like, son is about to turn 18. And he's in Iowa. I haven't seen him in months because of this lockdown. So I'm like freaking out. Like, we talk every day, but it's like, he's just not even bothered. Like, he's just like, whatever, it's fine. I'm just like, you're a maniac. Are you serious? Like,
I mean, what it, again, just because of the elastic nature of time, it feels like I can't believe it's already September. And then also, again, it just feels like we've been in this for years. Like, so yeah. I can't fully, I think it'll be one of those things that we won't really be able to process until it's retrospectively.
Hindsight. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but there's so much in this last, not just this year, but this last 4 years that we're going to have to figure out that is, I mean, there's no way for us to process everything that has gone on, will go on. Like, it's just, and we've reached that precipice where nobody knows what's going on, but then again, nobody trusts what's being told to them. And unless you see it, you have reason for doubt. It's, which is crazy.
Well, and what a perfect time to release an album.
Yeah, I know, right? The perfect time for me to tell people it's amazing, and then either people blindly believe it.
Well, I mean, listen, it. You know, the truth of the matter is, even though I make jokes about it, I guarantee you there are people who are like, oh my, thank God there's a thing. You know, like, you're putting something out there that's going to hopefully kind of help people deal and distract people. It's something right. for them, you know, something for your fans to look forward to. It's something for you to right. be able to distract yourself with for a minute and kind of
talk how I about, feel about the, you know, Snyder Cut. Yeah, exactly.
So it is, it, you know, it will be really interesting to see all of the art that follows all right. of, you know, this chaos that we've been experiencing True. In the past 6 months.
I don't understand why so many people have put off working, to be honest, like going, like doing stuff, putting stuff. Movies I get, shows I get, obviously, like massive productions and stuff. But I mean, dude, we didn't record this last year. We recorded this like 4 months ago, you know, we recorded this in the quarantine. Like, we were originally going to do this in January of next year.
Uh-huh.
And when all of my travel plans went away, I, you know, was sitting at home and I was just like, well, shit, dude, let's just do it now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You might as well. What else? I find that it's been, was the album pretty much, how do you work? Is it done before you go into the studio, or do you have a bunch of solid ideas and then you just kind of like plow through them as you're recording, go, let's do this, let's try this, let's try that?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit of the latter, but more the former, to be honest. I am a guy who I'm constantly writing. Like, I'm constantly, at any given moment, I have probably about 10 songs that I'm working on at a time, you know, man. Like, and really honing in. And it's usually when I, you know, I'm done with one that I turn my focus to another. So these songs were written over the course of 20, almost like maybe even more, 20 years.
Oh,
and so this is stuff I've been sitting on, you know, and I knew that if I was going to do a solo album, it was going to be stuff like this, like stuff that I write for me, basically.
Right.
And
right.
maybe people don't necessarily hear it, you know, it's because it's stuff that doesn't fit with either of my other bands.
Yep.
But then again, that's the perfect reason to do a solo project, is to give people stuff that don't fit with the normal narrative and really kind of fill in some pieces to the musical puzzle, at least for me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just good that you've been able to be creative. Like, I found it really hard to be creative. I would have thought, oh, I have all this time, I'll write all this comedy. And it's like, right. I'm not really writing very much. I don't really... You know, so it makes sense to hear you say, like, oh, this has been, I've been kind of like squirreling these away for 20 years.
Right.
And now this was the time that they were ready to bear the fruit.
Right. Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Do sure. you find it, do you work better on a deadline?
Yes.
Do you work, and do your ideas feel better when you're pushed to be creative? Like,
yeah,
I feel like I'm that way sometimes too.
Well, I know when I have shows coming up that in my mind there's a goal, and right. I have to, like, I'm just not good at, I'm not great at going, oh, I have, you know, like, whatever, six, well, probably a year before I'll do stand up again, to be honest.
Right. Yeah.
And roughly. And so I don't go, I'm going to write so much in a year. I just go, I probably won't have a show until, you know, well into next
a week
year.
Before the show.
I'll just, yeah. Yeah, I was a write the essay the night before kind of a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The pressure of it just kind of like lit the fires inside, and then I'm not second guessing because I just don't have time.
Right.
And I feel like kind of motivated by the anxiety of it.
Right.
And when
right.
I have all the time in the world, I'm just like, I don't know what I want to write about. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
I'm just like that too. So I feel you on that.
Yeah, but you put out a lot, like you do a lot of stuff though. Like you
yeah,
have
but a lot of it, a lot of it is me going, I've got this idea. And then somebody goes, oh, okay, let's put it out. And then I just kind of sit, you know, quietly. And then all of a sudden somebody's like, okay, we need that in 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh shit. And I finish it. You know, I've done all my books were like that. Like I started my books ostensibly probably 6 months prior. And then I get an email from my editor and he's just like, you know, your deadline is in a month. And I say, oh shit. And then I write 6 chapters in 1 month that may be the most rambling weirdness of all time, you know?
That's so funny. Yeah, I feel like I've kind of done my last couple comedy specials that way where it's like, you know, I've been working on stuff for a while and they go, okay, you're recording this in like a month. Like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And when I look back, you know, I always go, ah, oh, God, I wish I had spent more time developing that one thing.
Right.
And I didn't. But then here I am again, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's fine. I'll just,
it'll work out. Now, see, songs, I look at songs like bits, actually, because there's certain songs that in retrospect I've gone, man, I could have tried this when we recorded it. Maybe if we'd done it live, we could have added these couple things because then we do it live, you know. But with bits, it's harder because we come back to songs. Bits live in that moment. And then you're constantly, so it's a harder, I mean, it's so much harder for you. Do you find yourself coming back to bits that worked in the past and maybe reworking them with different things in different directions? Or
I find there are recurring themes. And then there are things where I go, shit, I already did this in a special. Here's a great add-on or a great reworking of that bit, but I can't do it. It's like,
it's frozen in time.
It's frozen. And that's what's, you know, that's the thing that I'm so envious about with music is that people want to hear.
Yeah, they
want
to hear the
they get upset if they don't hear. If you do old jokes, people are like, fuck you. Why am I paying to see old jokes? I already fucking saw this, you piece of shit. And so it's, you know, because stand-up is like, comedy is like a magic trick. And once people see the reveal, they're like, yeah, I've already seen that one, man. Fucking do another one.
Yeah.
But with music, it's like, take me on the journey. And I'm curious to hear your take on, because you say, look, you know, you have reimaginings of songs. What the expectation is when you're playing a show to like, hey, I want to try this in a different way. Do you feel like fans are like, no, man, fucking play it the way I know it. Or are they like, oh, are they along for the ride when you as an artist kind of need to express something in a new way?
That's interesting. There's been a couple of times where I've done not only, especially in my acoustic shows, I've done like, you know, broken down versions of certain songs, and certain songs, they lend themselves to it. But then there are other songs that I've done almost complete reimaginings. Like I have a bluesy version of 3150 that I used to do in my acoustic set that almost had like a Gene Genie kind of vibe to it. Uh-huh. Like Gene Genie kind of like Johnny Cash vibe. And I noticed that people either loved it or were just, you know, I don't want to say put off by it, but they were just kind of like kind of fold the army, just kind of I see what you see what you're trying to do, but I'm not going to bite, you know, like it was kind of like that, you know. The cool thing is that I have the reverse of that is I have a full band version of Bother that I do every once in a while that is actually really, really cool and impacts. And it's like it takes it out of that kind of acoustic realm and into like a full ensemble piece. So I don't know, man. It's weird when I know I'm one of those dicks who just wants to hear the song the way it is, you know?
Right.
However, I can definitely appreciate a different take that has the kind of same soul to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's It's weird. It's a tricky, it's like, it's got to be done just right. You know, you got to thread that fucking needle or it's garbage on either side. You know?
Just never, I think you just never know because it you know, as someone who has been to a lot of concerts, I change my mind. Like sometimes I feel like, oh, you know, because there as an audience member in a show, there is a little bit of like, oh, I'm sort of in control of this experience. I'm paying to sort of see, know, the puppet show of this thing that is so impactful to me. Wow. And then other times you're like, no, you go, you express something new. You go, what a great reimagining. But I couldn't tell you what my emotional rules are for either one. It's just kind of in the moment. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe it depends on a person's mood that day. Maybe it depends on what's going on, if they're even open to it, because certain people are, you know, I don't believe that everyone is one way or another. I think it depends on when you catch them, you know, I think most people want to be more open-minded, you know, obviously, but then you get somebody on the wrong day and they're just, you know, the steel trap comes down and they don't want to fucking hear about you from Adam, you know? Right. So it's like, I don't know, man. It's almost like you just kind of have to go for it and see what happens.
Well, if it's authentic to you and it's something that that is really important to you, then I think it's worth taking the swing, you know, because that's, I think, as long as people can sort of read that authenticity, I think they'll be forgiving, even if they're like, oh, I didn't really necessarily think I wanted to hear the song that way, but I appreciate what he's doing and I like this guy and I'm going to go along with it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so it's, I guess it's up to the night, you know?
And so with the album, what's the plan? Are you playing anywhere? Like, is this like,
I'm working on it. Let's put it that way. I'm trying to figure out what the fuck's going to happen. But I mean, I think maybe even earlier this time next year, we'll be back. I'll be back on the road. I honestly think that by the beginning, at least spring or summer of next year, like we'll be fully like back on it. They're already experimenting with social distancing, quarantine shows and whatnot. That festival in the UK was actually very, very similar to something that I was thinking about doing and was pitched to me by some people here in Vegas to do a show kind of like that. Basically, yeah, they're basically in the bike racks, you know, just kind of hanging out. Like everybody's got their own VIP section, which you can tell is very appealing to most people, you know? Yeah. So, I think that's going to be the bridge that kind of gets us back to there. Yeah. I don't think the drive-in shows are the way because there's no reaction, you know, drive-in shows, they work for movies or live streams. They don't necessarily work in a live setup because I've talked to comedians who've done some of that and they're like, the laughs are in the car. You can't hear anything.
You just hear people honk or flash their lights.
Right. Exactly. It's like, what are we, Sturgis? What the hell's happening here?
What an audience really needs to do is come together as like a singular organism for a night, you know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it is. And that's really hard to do. People are in cars because then it really is almost like, it's almost like they're watching it kind of on YouTube in a way, rather than their own isolated experience.
I love a drive-in movie as much as anybody, but when it's drive-in Broadway, I'm not really sure.
Drive-in Broadway.
I don't know if that works or not. You know,
that's a fucking great, that's at least a sketch, but if it's not a sketch, then it's
either that or I give it 2 hours and it's a band name, you know, like people
driving Broadway.
Hey, we're driving Broadway from Peoria, Illinois.
And they just do like speed metal versions of Broadway songs.
Yeah, totally. You know, just
like My Fair Lady.
Camry, All Alone at the Moon.
Remember any Cats fans out there? You like fucking Cats?
You love Cats, dude. I love Cats.
God, that's a fucking great. That is a great idea.
That would be a great bit. That'd be a great like.
Listen, when you're touring, if you want to drop in. a couple of Broadway covers.
Oh, I'm in. I'll totally go for it.
Metal style. But you know, it's what's really inspiring about what you're doing is that I can understand. I'm guessing it's probably pretty safe when you have like an existing. We have an existing band, you know, it's like, oh, I've been playing with, you're in a couple bands, but you're playing this one band for so long and you're so identifiable with it. And it's so, there is a bit of a safety zone, I imagine, because it's like, it's not, it's you, but it's also a thing.
Right. There's an umbrella effect.
There's an umbrella, really, like, you know, I hate to use the word brand, but it is kind of like the branding of what like Slipknot.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. And there's and like you said, I mean, not only there's safety, but there's a comfort in it, you know, where nine times out of 10, if it's not something incredibly different, there's a danger that you can coast in those things. But just be the fact that you have this history of music and you can touch on things that feel familiar and yet might not be pushing the envelope like you wanted to in the past, you know? So, I mean, luckily with Slipknot, we really try not to do that at all. We really try to do different things. And maybe that's why, for me, doing something like this just feels like second nature, is because I'm always trying to not only keep the audience guessing, but keep them pulled in, you know, and keep them engaged and really show them that I still care about what I'm trying to do, you know? So for me, I guess it's really about just not being nervous so much about doing something like this, but being excited, you know? I mean, I've never done anything that I didn't want to do, at least at first, mm-hmm. you know? Like, as my wife says, I'll try anything twice. You know, just make sure I really don't like that.
Let's double check on that. Yeah. I'm going to do three metal cats one more time. Yeah. Okay. I tried it twice.
Okay. I can totally say no. When it comes to this, it's like, this is stuff that, you know, most of my friends know, like this is this style of stuff that I just love playing. Like we all love playing just together. And you know, it really has the sense of the acoustic shows and the cover shows that I've done in the past. You know, it's celebratory. It's not anything trying to take itself too seriously. It's supposed to be, it's a fun album. It's a good time. And good. I think because of that juxtaposition works, because I'm not trying to cash in on the Slipknot brand or the Stone Sour brand. It's a much more different flavor, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like it was just in the last week or so, but Rob Zombie had posted something on Instagram like, oh, there was some sort of a date of, oh, this is the date where, you know, I released Hellbilly Deluxe and I had stepped out of White Zombie, and I was, you know, I know it was something he felt like he had to do, but I'm sure he was also nervous about it because you know, when you're in a band, you're kind of in a thing, and then you step out as a solo artist and it's like, hey guys, it's me.
Right.
Hope you like me.
There's no one to hide behind. Yeah.
But it sounds like after everything you said, like, oh yeah, but this is so like this, the idea of this, the concept of this is so already in your wheelhouse and your fans already understand this about you. And I think it's probably one of the things why they love about you. It's like, oh yeah, Corey does a lot of different shit. He's not just one thing. He's a bunch of different things.
Right. Right. And it's the reasons why I do them.
Yeah.
You know, it's because I want to do them, you know, it's like, I, you know, I don't write books or, you know, work on screenplays or I'm in movies. Like I don't do any of that stuff just because I can. It's because I have genuine interest there that I love, you know, like, and that's the same with music, you know, the type of music that I make. And I've said this since day one, is the stuff that I want to hear and I want to make. And then I'd share that with the audience. I don't necessarily make it for them. I make it for me first. And then I share it with the audience. So anything I put out there, I've already backed 100%. You know, now in retrospect, there's certain stuff that I've gone back and listened to. And I've gone, you know what? I could have done that a little better. I could have tried this a little better.
That's just because you evolved.
Exactly. That's absolutely true. So for me, because of that, when people and my audience knows that when they hear something, they know it's where I'm coming from, like 100%. And they know that I'm not going to lie to them. I'm just gonna lay it down straight and give it to him.
Yeah, and I think that is also because of the relationship that you've built with them. They understand that about you.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's part of probably what the fandom is like, you know, what's Corey going to do next? Like, is it
right? Right.
Going to be a book? Is it going to be a movie? Is it going to be this?
There's obviously that group of the metal side that just wants me to growl and scream all the time. And then there's the Stone Sour side where they just want me to do acoustic stuff all the time, you know,
right.
And, you know, pour my heart out. But there's that middle ground that I've always tried to cover where it's 70s and 80s glam. It's there's some country in there. There's jazz. There's, you know, old school, you know, rap rock from the East Coast, like New York City stuff, you know. So there's like all these different things that I'm really trying to kind of, you know, fill in the blanks with. And that's new territory for me. I don't know how people, I mean, but everybody's really digging. I mean, we just dropped Highway 666 today, which
is nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And that one, dude, that's a song to drive fast to. Like, it's a really good, like, it's a stomper, you know? And that sounds completely different from the two releases, you know? So it's really setting the stage for people to go, well, what the hell is this album going to sound like? And the only thing I can say is rock. That's all I can say. It's a rock album. Now, that may mean every flavor of rock, but it's a rock album nonetheless, you know?
Yeah. And it seems to me that what you're describing, it took you all the years and all the other stuff you were doing to be able to present this. Like, this would have probably been a tough first album for you to release.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If I hadn't done everything for 20 years. Yeah, man. I mean, that's, I think one of the reasons why it made sense to do it now, you know, if I'd have done this 10 years ago, it wouldn't have had the same importance for me. It wouldn't have felt right. Now, you know, 10 years ago I had actually thought about doing a solo thing, but again, I created a band to do it with, and then I basically didn't even put my name on it. It was just Junk Beer Kidnap Band, and I just kind of hid in that. I was like, well, what's the point of doing a solo thing if all you did was start another band?
Right.
And then it kind of fell by the wayside and whatnot. And it was fun while I was doing it, but that's why I didn't do this then, is because it wasn't time, you know?
Yeah. But you're able to pull from every discipline, every experience, everything that you've learned up to this point.
Right. Right.
To be able to just like aim that at this project. And that to me sounds really fun. It's sort of one of the fun things about sort of like, you know, getting a, you know, like starting to get a little bit older as an artist, where it's like, okay, now I got some time and experience and some technical this and some, you know, and I'm going to, this is sort of like a retrospective of everything I've learned up to right now.
Right. Right. And it's also a reflection of the influences that maybe you've never shared before, you know, because with Slipknot and Stone Sour, you're kind of trying to push a different, like a new thing, you know, like really trying to kind of, you know, present things that hopefully people haven't heard before. But with this is actually more about, and maybe that's the point that I've hit in my career, where I'm sharing more of the stuff that I grew up listening to, you know, the stuff that I was really into. Because I noticed that with Frank Zappa when he did Joe's Garage, there was such a doo-wop vibe to it that, and it was, you know, well into his career. That was actually, and it was after he'd done all the prog weirdness and you know, he was getting into that stuff. Joe's Garage, I think, is one of my favorite songs they ever did. That album is ridiculous, you know? So maybe that's where I'm at, this point where I'm sharing some of the stuff that kind of got me through my teenage years, my early years. And that led me to wanting to write stuff, you know?
And I think also this time, because at the time when Frank was doing all that stuff, it's not like there were all these different outlets that knew what to do with it, you
right.
know? And when we look back, we go, oh, you can't put Frank in a box. He was Frank. Like, he right. was just Frank right. Zappa. That
he was his own genre.
But now, because you have because of the internet, you know, like, you can have a direct relationship. I mean, Rob and I talk about this all the time, where I say, like, it's so crazy. It's not like, you know, it's not like a ton of radio stations play Rob Zombie songs, yet on his touring cycle, his touring gets bigger and bigger every year. And it's like he has more of a direct connection to his audience. And that kind of old conventional, content delivery system is definitely, it's
very antiquated. Absolutely.
It's very antiquated. So it's great that you are able, we live in a time where you are able to try whatever you want and know, like, you know, there's not going to be some label executive going, well, I don't know how we're going to get this out to anybody. It's right. Like, no, I can just put it out and I have a direct connection to my fans.
Yeah. And that's been the thing that it's been a really weird learning curve over the years, you know, especially for me with so many projects, you know, and you, when you deal with people who just can't get their mind out of that old system, you know, trying to explain that to people and look for, and thank God for my management. You know, my management is so forward thinking and so always looking for the next way, the next thing to really, you know, try and connect and kind of wade through all that stuff. Trying to explain that to someone who can't, you know, set the clock in their car is like trying to explain math to an almond. It's like, there's no way what you're saying is going to get through because they don't even really understand what the internet is, let alone how to utilize it. And really, you know, between social media and streaming and all of that stuff. I mean, that's stuff that I'm just now starting to really kind of relate to and understand, you know, and it's taken years. It's really taken a long time to really understand the effect and watch the algorithms and all this weird stuff. And you just pray that people dig your stuff. And you're just like, I don't even know what the hell, who put the tick in the talk? I don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, that's the thing is that you can't, and that's all the stuff that you can't control. So all you can do is just be true to what you want to say. And sometimes, you know, like it may not, even if I had this really long, I had this conversation on the podcast recently with this musician named Molly Tuttle. And we were talking about Fleetwood Mac and Tusk. And how when it came out, everyone pretty much was like, what the fuck is this? And now they look back and they go, my God, what an innovative
genius
thing they did with a hard right turn after Rumors. And so it just took some time for society to catch up. So you can't control any of that stuff. So all you can do is make what you want to make. And then at the end of your life, they'll look back and go, oh my God, look, Corey did those some amazing stuff. Look at all these things he tried.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all you really can hope for, you know. I've always said the success is surprising to everyone, including the person who was successful, you know. Because 9 times out of 10, you're just kind of doing stuff to see if people dig it. And then all of a sudden, everything blows up. You know, I'm sure Lady Gaga was that way. But I don't know if she really understood that she was going to become so iconic, you know. It's something that when you're in that moment, you're thinking about it, you're like, oh, it could be cool. But then to get to the point where you can't go anywhere,
right?
You know, that level of fame, people don't expect that. And when you don't expect it, you're not prepared for it. And it just throws you into this craziness, you know? So success is, you know, it all comes down to what you think is like success means too, you know? So for me, it's just, you know, getting songs out there and having people dig them. And using these different tools and whatnot has been, it's been interesting, you know, especially when it comes to putting myself out there and really having people realize all of the things that I've done in my career. And maybe people who've never heard of me before going, oh shit. And then they do a deep dive into my background and really check out the things that I've done. And then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where will I be ready when something like that happens, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you get six, if you get that kind of like mega crazy, you know, one of the most famous people in the world success at a young age, that's gotta fuck with you.
It has to.
When you've lived a little bit longer and you kind of understand, like, not that I'm saying that there, I'm sure there isn't, you know, the dangers of a kind of an ego trap or being taken advantage of by people who just want to, you know, siphon off your success. But I think if you're a little bit older, you just have a little more of a perspective on it that you, where you might go, okay, yeah, this is cool. Maybe doesn't mean everything
in
the world, because I really think the best success you can ever ask for is like, you know, do I, am I able to do the things I want to do? And do I not have to do anything to survive?
Right.
Do not have to compromise anything in order to survive.
Right.
And if you can do those things, you know, if you can, then I think that's success. You get to do what you want to do. And, you know, like the metric of how much money, how many albums, how many people, it's like, right. Well, I don't know. Does that matter? Like, isn't it really like, are you happy what you do, what you're doing? Are you right. happy with what you're doing?
You know, the when I realized that money doesn't equal quality, I think that was when I really stopped worrying about money. You know, I mean, I make a good living, but obviously I'm not, you know, like I'm not rolling in it, you know, but I can pay my bills and my kids are fed, clothed, and they have college funds if they want to go to college.
Yeah.
That's all I really ever wanted, you know, like my want for material things is so small when it, you know, in relation to people who hunger for money and the things that they think make them feel bigger than they are,
yeah.
that it's almost good that, you know, I found a level of success that I wanted, you know, where it's like, I get to do whatever I want really. And I'm also, I don't have people camped outside my house. I'm not like followed by hordes of shitty camera people, you know, like I can live my life and I can also pay my bills and I get to make music. So I'm fine with where I'm at, you know, like I'm all set. I don't need any more bullshit, you know?
And, you know, for people who are people who look to you and they go, wow, you know, I really want to do that. I want to do what Corey does. You know, I think the idea of saying like, yeah, find who you are, like be the best version of you. So
right.
what have you learned about becoming the best version of you that you could kind of advise people who are starting on their path now? Like, here's how you kind of discover who you are. Some of it's just right. an experience, but do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I mean, it's different for everybody, but the thing that I've really realized is that the more you can know not only who you are, but who you want to be, the stronger your base can be when things go off the fucking, you know, the rails, you know. I've had a handful of times in my life where I've struggled with addiction. I've struggled with, you know, depression, just dealing with things like that. It has been easier because I know who I am, what I've been through, but I also know who I want to be. You know, it's the people who don't have an identity that can't focus on one to work towards, you know? And I think that's one of the things that's not really pushed out there, you know? Like there's a lot of people who are listless in their life and they feel kind of pulled in certain different directions and they don't understand things. And I think the reason that they can't find a place of peace and gravity is because they've never really let themselves figure out who they are.
Right.
And once they do that, that gives you that core, that gives you that foundation and almost like a touchstone to kind of come back to. And, you know, so when things do get fucking crazy, it's easier to go. It's like, you know what? This isn't something I would do. This isn't something I believe in. This isn't something I would engage in. We all have crazy times in our life that, you know, we look back on and we're either like, well, that was nuts. Or we go, I can't believe I fucking lived through that, you know?
Right.
But if we have a center in our life and we know who we want to be, we don't want to live in the past, then we look back on that as a memory and not something that might happen again, you know? Right. So it just comes down to that, you know, self-realization is probably the strongest, you know, trait anyone could have, you know?
And it's a lifelong journey. It's like,
it is, man. And I think it's harder now because there's so many distractions.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, we're all cats with laser pointers. Just fucking, I mean. It's just.
Yep, end it with meow, 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 meow.
Meow, meow, meow.
I often, you know, like think it's good for people to, go, fuck, I don't know what I want to do. And I don't know. It's like, you know what? It's all in your head. Fucking write it down. Just right. Write out who you are, what is important to you, what you want, and what resources do you think you possess today to take any sort of incremental step toward those things. Or like, or, you know, a good question is the hypothetical game where people go, oh, I don't think I could ever do that. And you go, okay, fine. What if you pretended that you were the type of person that could? What would that person do? And sometimes taking it out of your own first person perspective can help solidify and give you kind of the right vantage point to start just processing some of those things, putting down some of those ideas and thinking about
right.
it in that way.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's a good point. And maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's not even just trying to figure out who you are. It's just like finding out what your ideal is.
Right.
You know, and then just kind of working towards that. And maybe one of those days, the ideal becomes the reality.
Right, right, right. Yeah. I mean, at least if it's, you know, if you look back at the 20 years of work you've done and, you know, and someone said to, you know, Corey Taylor 20 years ago, all right, in 20 years, you're going to release this solo album and it's going to be the culmination of all this stuff, but you got to go through all this stuff to get there. You might be like, I don't know if I feel like doing all. I mean, you know, it's just like, you really do have to, you know, and as, you know, as someone who's been in recovery from drinking right. for 17 years, it, right. the day at a time thing really does have value to it. Like, and it's not yeah. just about addiction. It's like, even now, especially, you know, in a pandemic, just do what you can, get through what you can accomplish in a day.
Right.
Try right. not to take too much of the past on. Try not to be too bogged down by the future. Who knows? You know, like just go easy on yourself, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't agree with you more. I mean, I would absolutely embrace it. I feel like my younger self would embrace it. Like 20 years ago at the very beginning, like in 99, when we were really taking off with Slipknot.
Yeah.
I feel like my younger self would have understood that. It's like, oh, you're going to go through some shit. I'd be like, okay, well, I mean, I've been through shit before this, you know? So it's, I guess maybe it's like putting it in perspective would actually even would have helped me deal with. It's like, well, I like told myself I was going to go through this. Let's just fucking hunker down, you know? But I feel like, you know, I've never had any regrets in my life, you know, like I really haven't. There's things I maybe wish I'd have thought through a little better, you know, like there's a couple of marriages I wish I'd thought of through a little better, but I don't regret anything because I'm here. I'm exactly where I need to be. And I went through all that stuff to get here, you know? So for me, yeah, I think that'd be an easy talk, you know, because I could lay it out. And knowing me, my thought process isn't much different now than it was back then. I was just a little fucking crazier, but
right.
I feel like I could have, like my younger self would have processed it and been like, all right, I'll wear better shoes.
All right, I'll stretch. Okay, I'll stretch.
You know what? I'll stretch out the hammies. We'll focus on my calcium intake, strengthen these bones.
I know I have a hard out with you, so I have 25 minutes left. So I would love to talk some horror.
Okay.
And kind of. Oh, by the way, I sent. Of course, you know, Rob knew who this guy was, but I stumbled across this video on the obscure media subreddit a few weeks back of this dude called Screaming Lord Such. Do you know who he is?
Oh yeah.
Dude, I had no, it was like, oh, this guy's performing this song called Jack the Ripper in front of a late 60s group of kind of like buttoned up British teenagers who do not know what to make of it. And I was like, yeah. Oh my God, is this guy the original horror rocker? and he's basically just like screaming into the microphone about Jack the Ripper. It's I don't know anything. I didn't know much about him. I don't know much about him personally or anything about him. But Rob goes, oh yeah, 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 yeah. I know all about that guy. You know,
yeah.
It's like he said him, and then another dude called Screaming Jay Hawkins, who I also am not
Screaming. He was a blues player. Screaming Lord Sutch, I want to say was from Europe.
Yeah, I think he was a British guy. He was a British guy.
And we met him on one of our. I want to say it was our second tour of Europe. He came to one of our Slipknot shows.
Oh, wow. And,
he was still alive. I don't know if he's still alive now or just passed away, but he came down and we were like blown away. We were like, holy shit. I mean, it's really, really cool. You know, it was, he's fucking amazing, dude. You want to talk about way ahead of his time.
Yeah, audience literally did not know what to make of him, and to understand the context of like, oh, I think people are seeing this kind of thing, you know, they just don't even have the it was like watching Marty McFly play,
Johnny B. Good,
Johnny B. Good, they just don't have the frame of reference for it yet, right. You know, I guess you guys just aren't ready for that, but your kids are gonna love it, you know,
yeah, exactly,
like that kind of thing. But the sort of the weaving of horror and music and rock, is it do you think some of it's the aesthetic, or is it just sort of like that kind of like raw emotional adrenalized thing, that quality that like a really good horror movie has? Is it just that kind of raw emotion? What do you think the connections are?
I mean, I think it's that. I think a lot of it comes down to, especially for kids, like teenagers, it comes down to it being cool, cool to watch, cool to look at. You know, especially the people who are too cool for school, like trying to pass off like they're not getting the shit scared out of them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you look over and they've got the pillow.
Yeah.
I used to love that. I think it comes down to, you know, does it look cool? Does it look real? Does it look like, is it gory enough? Like I think one of the things that's always kept horror in, especially in the metal crowd, was the fact that it mirrored our own sense of not isolation, but just being like, almost like that social pariah status, you know, like we were obviously not listening to top 40, and you know, most fucking horror movies weren't being nominated for, you know, Oscars and shit, with the exception of American Werewolf in London, you know.
Right.
So it's you know, I think there was just that kindred spirit that naturally attracted me and my friends to it, obviously. And it was just, you know, at the time, horror movies were fucking dope, dude. Like, they were so cool, you know? I wanted to be a Lost Boy more than anything else on the fucking planet.
Yeah, that is kind of a tough, you know, it's like, my wife and I watched that movie again recently. And, you know, with the exception of the, you know, that amazing saxophone concert that everyone goes to see on the beach. You know how teenage kids love to go see muscle dudes play the saxophone.
Jim Capella, you know, fucking ahead of time, dude. I'm telling you.
Hey, I guess you guys aren't ready for that, but your kids are going to love it. But,
could you imagine if we'd done that? Oh, that would have been amazing.
But, you know, we're watching that, you know, watching Jason Patrick's character, and my wife and I are like, wait, so why doesn't he want to be a vampire? Like, neither one of us could understand.
Right.
What was so bad about, you know, it's like, hey, he gets to be young for, you know, like they have to hunt, you know, sometimes, but
right.
You know, it actually was like, oh yeah, I don't know. It seems kind of fun.
Yeah. I'd have gone full on. I would have been just think about it, dude. You get cooler clothes, you get a better motorcycle. Jamie Gertz could be your chick. I mean,
you hang from your toes to sleep.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Oh my God. I just realized Alex Winter is in that. I got to watch the Bill and Ted. Oh, I got to watch Bill and Ted, the new Bill and Ted movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen Face the Music yet. So I gotta see that.
That is joyful to think that just out of the pure passion and love that movie was able to get made, like a third right. Bill and Ted movie was able to get made.
Yeah.
And I love that
they came together to do it, man. Like that's so rad.
I know they've been talking about it for a long time, but it just felt like, oh, is this ever going to happen? And,
right.
you know, Alex had come on the podcast over the years and he'd go, you know, I talk to Reeves about it all the time and he's in if we can find the right. So I'm just glad they did.
Yeah.
Are you looking to direct any more horror stuff, or do you want to direct, like, what do you want to make horror stuff?
I mean, I've got a handful of scripts I'm actually shopping right now. I don't know if I want to direct, to be honest, because I've never directed anything in my life. And I don't know if I'm a Clive Barker who can just walk in and be like, okay, this is what I want to see. And you know, it's like, yeah. I write visually, but at the same time, it's not my passion. My passion is in the writing of it and then seeing it kind of put up there. If I had the right director to kind of shadow and, you know, and maybe kind of like hands-on produce with it, I don't know, maybe. But yeah, it's just never been something that was my wheelhouse. You know, it was never my like intention to become a director.
Yeah, it is. I've often thought about it, but every time I watch a horror movie, and my wife and I are pretty forgiving because we know that it's very hard to make a movie, particularly in right. horror where a lot of the budgets are low and they have constraints. So it's like,
right.
well, they couldn't show this one kill because they didn't have the effects or they didn't right. have the budget. Maybe they lost light that day, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but because we watch so much stuff, it's almost put me off from wanting to direct because I go, well, I feel like every idea I have, I go, oh no, I've seen that. Oh no, but that's like this thing. Oh no, but that's like that. And you know, it's such a delicate balance with horror to like, you know, original idea, original presentation of an idea, original new presentation of old tropes or old ideas.
Right, right.
The right amount of action. There's this new trend in horror now, which is called elevated horror. And I feel like what that means is, it's very well acted. It's very beautifully shot, but nothing happens really for like an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh yeah. The Val Lewis.
The last 20 minutes, yeah. then it all like, and then it, then you kind of go, well, I hope that justified the first hour and 20 minutes that right, we watched. Right. Otherwise it was just long.
I feel like that's when it works. It really works. Like Hereditary works right. like that, which I loved, but I can't, there's certain movies I can't watch again because I was so fucking uncomfortable watching it the first time. Like me and my wife were like laying in bed. This was the middle of the afternoon, by the way. And she's like, let's watch a horror movie. Have you seen Hereditary yet? I was like, no. And we put it on, dude. And we were just slowly but surely leaning forward. Like, and it's on the TV. So we're just lurching up in the bed going, what the hell's happening? What the fuck is happening? Like it was to the point where then the absolute beautiful payoff at the end where you're just.
Yeah. I mean, that movie is that one's about 2 hours long. I think it's almost 2 hours long. And the first hour is just like, you just feel so uncomfortable watching this family process these tragic things right. that have befallen them. And they're yeah. just screaming and crying and most of it. And you just, it almost feels like being at your friend's house and watching their parents get in a terrible fight. And you just feel that like, yeah, I don't think I should be watching.
And yet they're your ride home and you can't like, you're stuck.
You're just and like, then all of a sudden before they take you home, some weird supernatural demonic thing unfolds.
Right, right, totally. Like, now we gotta get in the car. What the fuck? Oh.
Dude, can you drop me off? Your dad just lit himself on fire. Do you mind?
Yeah, dude. And he's still on fire.
Yeah, so I gotta get home.
It doesn't seem to be affecting him, and that's really off-putting.
I wish. Are you keeping track of all the? My wife and I watch some of the stuff, and I always forget to write down the good ones. You know.
It's so few far in between, but at the same time, it depends.
They're all fun though, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, there's the good ones and then there's the good, bad ones.
Right.
So you just find a way, and trust me, I've been in a couple of bad, bad ones that are just no fucking fun whatsoever. And it's the old adage that Seinfeld said. He's like, you watch a bad movie, it's 2 hours. You're in a bad movie, that's 2 years.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, I was like, you're right. You're absolutely right.
But you never know. And I think that's sort of the agreement that horror fans have to the genre, which is, right. You know, listen, it's in a way, it almost feels like going to a great flea market where you're going to just rifle through stuff. Some of it's going to work for you. Some of it's not, but it's all kind of fun to look through anyway.
Exactly. And if you walk out with nothing, it was still a good, like a good experience.
Still a good experience.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Because it's, you know, I mean, I find that we're actually run out of stuff. You know, every day we're checking Shudder and we're checking, you know, the different platforms, like anything new. We just want to watch something
right,
new.
Right.
And now I feel like we've gotten to a point where it's like we're just spoiled consumers. We're just like, more.
Right.
We need more. Because I can't watch. I have a real hard time watching realism. I have a hard time watching real dramas because I'm like, this, I feel very sad. Those make me feel sad because those things can happen. I need the layer of separation with horror so that I can kind of deal with it.
It's almost like we need it. It needs to be that's the whole point of going to a movie is to get lost in it, right? It's like, I don't want this to feel that close to home, you know?
Right.
I'm like, why would I want to go see a fucking movie that could happen to me? Screw that. I want to see, give me Marvel movies where it's like, I know this is bullshit. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. I don't need real drama. The world is dramatic.
Sucks right now. Why the hell? Yeah. No, I don't need a dissertation on some shit that might happen. No, I don't need that.
At this point, if like a bunch of vampires swooped in, people would be like, yeah, that tracks for 2020. Yeah, vampires.
Totally.
Yeah. Who had vampires?
What color hats are they wearing?
Yeah. I mean, are you going anywhere? Are you able to kind of, do you go outside your house at all? Like, are you able to?
The thrill of my life is every 4 days taking my 5-year-old back to her mom's house, you know, and then her getting dropped back off. But we, you know, I mean, we go out, we do stuff. Not a lot. You know, it's usually just running errands and stuff, but I've been to California and back a couple of times for work, like, you know, just kind of, you know, doing some press stuff and some setup. I haven't flown in months, dude. It's been crazy. Yeah, I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, this is the longest I've been off the road in 20 years, and it's like there's a part of me that loves it, but then there's that part of me, it's just like, yeah, but you, hey, listen, asshole, you can't do anything. It's just like, this isn't the vacation you wanted. It's like if you took a cruise to the Bahamas and then never got off the boat, you know, you stayed in your goddamn room and you're just like,
there it is.
Time.
Wave, look at the little porthole. Wave to
it. You can see it. Like, you can smell the salt. Like, it's like we're there.
Well, don't underestimate, by the way, the effect that when you start touring again, it might take a minute to get back into that momentum. Oh, it's going to kick your ass a little bit. You're gonna be like, how the fuck did I do this for 20 years?
Dude, you know what? And the funny thing is, like, I've been thinking about that. It's like, I'm like, how do I get back into the swing of, like, I mean, because to me, though, I'm looking at it almost in a weird way where there's like I feel for like the last maybe decade or so, maybe longer, I've been taking for granted a lot of the places that I get to go and see and do. It wasn't until I met my wife and we got married and then she, you know, came out and saw some of the world with me where I was like, she's having a great time. What the hell is wrong with her? You know, I'm like,
oh, she's experiencing the world.
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. What is this joy that you seem to be just wearing on your face? And I'm like, oh yeah, we're here together. Like, we're doing fun stuff. So it's almost like she kind of retaught me to enjoy and really embrace what I do and what I get to do and what I get to see, you know? So I'm thinking maybe when the time comes, I won't feel as cynical as I used to. It'll almost be like experiencing touring again for the first time, you know.
But this time, your fans might watch you openly weep on stage the first show, because it's just like the just that experience of like, oh my god, I didn't know if we were going to be able to do this again.
Right.
And the whole audience will have to have a good cry.
Yeah, everybody's going to hug each other. It's like be like that scene in The Stand where they have the get together, at least in the book, for the first time, and it's like 5 minutes of just thunderous applause and everybody bawling and
yeah, you'll appreciate it. You definitely will appreciate it. And
I'm looking forward to it.
I know you have a hard out in a couple of minutes. Is there anything else you want to cover before we wrap it out?
That's a good question. No, I mean, the album comes out October 2nd. Album's out October 2nd. We're going to, we just dropped Highway 666. You can check that out on all the streaming sites, and it's up if you've pre-ordered on like iTunes and stuff. It's an automatic.
I think this goes up September 29th. I think this will go up a couple
of weeks before the album. Okay, so right when this comes out, another tune will drop. Called Culture Head, which is a little heavier, a little sludgier, a little more like Alice in Chains meets SOD kind of vibe.
Okay.
Which is pretty rad. And it's, you know, it, yeah, I think, yeah, people really, really dig it. I'm working on something possibly a live thing. So, but that's all I can say about it right now, because I have not been cleared to say anything more.
I totally understand. No, I totally understand. and listen, you know, if that thing happens to be Drive-In Broadway with the first song, Speed Cats, when you guys do Speed Cats.
Dude, when we do Speed Cats, I'm going to be the fastest cat on that stage. I'm going to be in full Rum Tum Tiger outfit, you know. He's a curious cat.
I'm even just picturing it. It's amazing.
Just me, like fully, just like Tom Cruise running in a Rum Tum Tiger outfit.
Tom Cruise running. I know what you're talking about. The flat hands.
This guy.
I'm aerodynamic. Robert Patrick, like T-1000.
Right. That's exactly
the car.
Where he's just going for
it. No expression, just determination. I feel like just how we're plowing through 2020.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Get us out. Hurry up.
You know, sometimes some of the best ideas come from bits and being sarcastic. You're like, hey, we were being sarcastic, but this might actually be a good idea. So, just, you know, Corey, just sit with it. And just and the other thing is just let me know how I can be a part of it. That's all absolutely. I want to know. Dude,
you're the first one I'm calling, man.
I really appreciate that. Man, it's really good to see you. I'm so happy you're doing well and hanging
Thanks,
in
man.
There. And I'm so excited that you were able to kind of just pull the shit together and go, fuck, let's just do this now and get it done in time. I think people are really going to appreciate it. And, you know, again, it just shows that you're true to who you are. And you have a great respectful relationship with your fans. And that's, you know, like what more could you possibly ask for?
Right. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And like, you know, like I said, it's good to see you. It's been way too goddamn long. So let's do this again.
I would love to. Hang in there, man. Congratulations on the album. It's so good to see you. Okay. And I hope it's not another 4 years.
Yeah, no joke.
All right.
Oh, man. I'll talk to you later, dude.
The end.
1, 2, 3, 4. Six, 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 when the devil ran me down. It's ready to burn, ready to fix when the devil ran me down. He says, son, your soul's good as mine. Just give me more and you'll be fine. I turned and waved goodbye when the devil ran me down. That's right. it all and see what sticks when the devil let me down. He says, son, I know it's not your time. You gotta leave this world behind. I just laughed and waved goodbye. Was the devil let me down? Hey, all I know is only death provides.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.